Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be your views as well, because this is Open Line Wednesday. And so if you have something you'd like to talk about, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Until you start calling in from out across America, why, I thought maybe I'd talk a little bit about what's going on in our community. We tonight have the second major fire of the season. We had one maybe a week to 10 days ago. It was a fairly substantial fire down just south of us, and now today there's a fire on Bonny Doon. It simply went from about 30 acres to about 350 acres in a matter of an hour and a half, 2 hours. A lot of homes are endangered. We don't know what it's going to mean, but I don't think anybody can question that there's something strange about the weather. Have you ever seen so many tornadoes at one time, and all these tornadoes seem to be hitting towns? I mean, certainly there's always been tornadoes, but they were usually just out in the hinterlands of the Midwest, but they were wiping out towns, town after town after town. And then, of course, we find such unusual weather. We've actually see tremendous rainstorms. We see tremendous rainstorms that are preventing the farmers from getting their wheat crop in. Or if they put the wheat or the corn crop in, why, it's been flooded out and it's died. They have to do a second planting. Only they're not able to because it's still too wet to get the plants into the ground. And if they do plant late, why, of course, the crops have real problems as far as heat resistance. And then, of course, in other parts of the world, there are terrible droughts where in Australia for 7 years now, they've had a drought which has had a profound impact on their usually very large rice crops and usually very large wheat crops. The weather has changed throughout the world. Is this the climate change that Al Gore is speaking about? Or is it possible that somebody really is doing something about the weather? Is it possible that there is an attack on the United States by modifying our weather? And if there is an attack, who would be doing it? Well, we do know, for instance, that the government has a program for weather modification, but it's top secret. We cannot let the American people know. Why can't we let the American people know? If there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? They have something up in Alaska called the High Altitude Auroral Research Project that can be used to alter the jet stream, can be used to modify weather. Are they using it? Yes, they are using it. What are they doing? Oh, that's a secret. We can't let Osama bin Laden know what we're doing. After all, he might use this somehow to destroy us. Well, then, of course, we have the chemtrails. We have massive spraying in the atmosphere, and it's hard for a lot of people to believe that this really goes on. But, of course, we've seen evidence of it time after time. On at least two separate occasions, I've been told, actually three occasions, by people in the military, that when they asked their superiors what the chemtrails were, they would pass the question up through the ranks, and then the answer would come back, well, we are using a vaccine to protect the people from deadly disease. Why would they be using a vaccine? Of course, you can have aerial vaccines. They use these in Africa on elephants as contraceptives. Are they using them in America for some other purpose? Are they protecting us? Are they damaging us? Why is this all so secret? And do they have some other motive? Is it possible that they are modifying the weather? Give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is Open Line Wednesday, and of course, we always look forward to your calls. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Certainly our good friend Bob Fletcher had put together an excellent DVD on weather modification, and I think it's called Government Secrecy and Weather Modification. But Bob, Chris, had an opportunity to actually get footage from people who were involved in the weather modification. He has that in one of his DVDs, although not necessarily one on weather modification, but where actually a captain of the Air Force actually is interviewed and tells exactly what they're doing and how they are able to spray, how they are able, of course, to modify the weather. Of course, they can see clouds. In fact, if you doubt that they really can modify the weather, go up on the Internet and type in weather modification companies. And their companies will actually modify the weather for you. If you want, of course, snow for your snow resort up in the Rockies or in the Sierras, they will bring snow for you. But by so doing, of course, they're altering the weather to the east of that, because our data, the weather system seems to move from west to east. So if you take the moisture out of the air over the Sierras or over the Rockies, well, you're going to have an impact on what's going on as far as the Middle West and as far as the east is concerned. So they've known how to modify the weather going back to, well, really the late 1880s, 1890s, there was a man, he was actually, had been an artillery officer, and he noticed after great battles, and I think probably he was talking about the Civil War, that after a great battle, of course you'd tend to get a storm, and he felt it was possibly because of the smoke that got into the air. And he hypothesized the fact that if you could put particulate matter into the atmosphere, that you could actually get a storm, and you could actually provoke a storm. Well, I think I've seen this time and time again with major fires. We used to spend our summers up in Canada, and whenever there was a forest fire there, they would burn for several days, and then the weather would change. The rain would come, and it would help to put out the fire. And it was because I believe there was smoke was getting up in the air. The particulate matter began to precipitate out the moisture from the atmosphere, and it came back in the form of rain. And so this has been known for a long period of time. They can actually seed clouds with iodine and precipitate rain. And we'll be back in just a moment with a caller here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking about this whole idea of modifying the weather, and the government certainly knows how to do it. Even private companies can modify the weather. In fact, in China, they've guaranteed that the weather will be excellent during the Summer Olympics. Why? Because they're going to use their weather modification techniques. How do we know that they can do that? Well, you can go back to a book that was written back in 1970 by Zbigniew Brzezinski, one of the most powerful men in the world today, worked for the Rockefellers, created the Trilateral Commission. But in that book, Between Two Ages, America in the Technotronic Age, somewhere between page 55 and 65, in a footnote at the bottom of the page, he talked about how in the future we were going to be able to create storms and droughts and chronic diseases. Storms and droughts and chronic diseases. Certainly, go up on the Internet and try to get a copy of Between Two Ages. There aren't very many copies there. There, at least last time I checked, they were well over $100. They don't want you to know that they've had this ability going back to the 1970s. And they actually were able to modify the weather in Vietnam during the Vietnam War to create monsoons along the Ho Chi Minh Trail to make them impassable for the supplies were being brought down to kill our boys. Well, again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are we doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing well.
What do you think of the unusually hot weather people
yes,
have it here
is.
In Santa Cruz?
It's very strange. I was going to say that now it's easy. It's actually very easy for them to modify the weather through ionization. It's all you have to know is some basic principles of ionization.
Right.
And these theories of electricity, I think you can go back in time to the days of Tesla, when Tesla was very involved in the theory of generating electricity from actually he had this idea of having a tower that would that would attract electricity. It was one of his theories. It was one of his pet theories that he would be able to create electricity from building a high tower into the atmosphere and attracting, electrons or neutrons or, well, not neutrons, but I was thinking, the Los Alamos Research Laboratory, I think they're very involved in this kind of thing. And also they're involved in electromagnetic radiation, and experiments like that. But I think they're probably keeping it a secret because they don't want people to get scared out of their wits what they're doing. But I think it's possible that they actually created the storms like Katrina. What happened in Katrina?
Well, it certainly was very interesting. It was headed right for New Orleans, and
yeah.
Then at the last minute, it sort of changed directions. Like, but we don't know.
Yeah.
All we do know is that the storm had actually passed through, and it was not a major hurricane. It was a severe storm. It had passed through New Orleans. The streets were beginning to dry. And then suddenly, why, of course, the dikes broke there and flooded the area. There's some people who suggested they were blown up. I don't know what happened. I do know that it was very, very convenient for the developers because they're going to be able to keep the blocks from moving back into their homes.
Right,
And, of course, that's going to be then converted into new development areas. That's a lot better than eminent domain. It is the people left their homes and they were flooded and they're no longer habitable. Oh, shucks, isn't that too bad?
Well, it's McCain gave one of his speeches for the primary. He gave a speech at a small town outside of, New Orleans?
New Orleans, right.
And he's saying that, geez, what they did with Katrina was horrible. And yet at the same time, he was having a birthday party or something like that with Bush somewhere in Arizona. At the time that Katrina happened.
Well, of course, it's always very easy to say something to get the support of the people, and that's what politicians do. You never, of course, believe what a politician says.
No.
You look at their record, and, of course, you watch what they do.
I find it very disturbing. This election is going to be very interesting, but very disturbing because there are several factors that I'm rather worried about. I'm afraid that McCain will be like another Bush. I'm pretty sure. I don't see him as being that much different, except his outlook on the social programs is quite different than Bush's. But I mean, he's a liberal in that respect. But I think in every other way, I think he's gonna try to continue what Bush has been doing.
Well, actually, Tom Daschle has made the comment that actually McCain approached the Democratic Party and said he'd be glad to become an independent, and then of course he could sit in on their caucuses and help them with their programs. And the Democrats, even the Democrats, didn't want John McCain. But Tom Daschle has come out with that recently, and I'd like to verify it. We have the documentation on it. At least that's what Tom Daschle said. Former, I guess he was the former speaker, not speaker. He was the majority leader in the Senate. So basically, I don't think they're giving us a choice. But then, would you expect them to give us a choice? It's like a choice between being shot or being hung. I mean, you don't really like any of the choices.
They don't electrocute,
but they have not really given us a choice for a long time. Sometimes, though, the candidate has been much more convincing. I mean, he's talked about all the right things, but never believe what a man says. Look and see what he does.
And that's true. But I think we're in very serious trouble, and as you've been saying for the past couple of years, it's altogether getting altogether worse.
Well, I think we're on the edge of real financial crisis.
I believe that
we are on the edge of an energy crisis. I believe that we're on the edge of a food crisis. And, of course, as you look at these things that are happening, and then you remember the story that you'll find recorded in Revelation 6:8. And I look, and behold, a pale horse, and the rider upon him was death, and Hades followed close behind, and power was given unto them to kill a quarter of the population of the world by the sword, we're talking about war, and then by pestilence, and by famine, and by the beasts of the world. Well, certainly, you know, we started out talking about how the weather changes are well setting us up for famine. Actually, America is the greatest exporter of corn in the world. Mm-hmm. About 60% of the corn that crosses national boundaries comes from the United States. Only our corn crop isn't getting in this year because of the flooding. And then, of course, we have a significant part of the wheat and the rice crops. And, of course, these do come from other countries as well. But they're all having difficulty getting the crops in the ground. We do not have any massive stores of food. Mm. There are food riots throughout so much of the rest of the world. But here in the United States, they don't emphasize these things. We don't see the food riots on evening television. We hear about Britney Spears.
Right, yeah.
About Paris Hilton.
Yeah.
About Toby Bryant and what's going on with the NBA.
Yeah.
But we are not hearing about the important things, the murder and the rape and the torture that's being carried out in Zimbabwe by the government that we put in power there, and we're still financing, because we're financing the Chinese communists, we're financing the military that's oppressing and torturing and murdering the people in Zimbabwe, with the full help of Mbeki, of course, in South Africa, who we helped to install. So people have to begin to understand that the purpose of the media is to entertain us, to shape our thoughts, to modify our opinions, but mm-hmm. never to tell us the truth.
No,
anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Well, they do these media blackouts on very important events. They've done it. I watch the media, and I watch it over and over again. Something really important happens that you want to know about. They shut out the truth. They put a blanket on
it. Well, they call it censorship. But of course, here in America, people cannot believe that press is controlled, but it is. 90 to 95% of the media is controlled by 5 mega corporations. We're just fortunate to have a small voice and those stations that are still operating independently. Hey, thanks very much for calling, Ray.
Okay.
God bless. All right, fine. Well, let's go to Woody, who's calling in from Iowa. But again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. Hi, Woody. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm doing fine tonight. Thank you. Say, I wanted to ask you what you thought about HAARP playing any role in all of this rain we're getting here in Iowa.
Yeah, boy, are you not able to get the crops in the ground?
Well, on my farm, I happen to be in an upland area. So we've got the crop planted, and it's coming on. This is corn and soybeans. But a lot of the people that are on river bottoms not far from me here, there's at least 3 major rivers that go through the area. Why, as I was going down to church tonight, there's a lot of that bottom ground that's all flooded, and crops are flooded out. And, so it's going to be difficult now, as late as it is, to get the ground dried back out once the water recedes, and for farmers then to get in and try and plant perhaps soybeans, which is a shorter season crop, and get a partial yield come fall from that.
Well, you see, I really started the program out, Woody, by talking about my concern about the HAARP. And for those people who don't know what this is a secret government project. You can read about it on the Internet. It's the High Altitude Auroral Research Project. We have a book on that called The HAARP, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. And it can be used to heat the ionosphere to change the direction of the jet stream and to modify the weather. But it's all top secret because we couldn't allow Osama bin Laden to know about it. Woody, I'm really very, very concerned that they are modifying the weather, and I think that maybe perhaps even their people are working to bring about the fulfillment of the prophecies, but from the wrong side. We'll be right back. So anyway, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens, but I'm very, very concerned about the late planting across the country, and that in many areas they're just not going to be able to get those crops in. And certainly this is true in your area, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Fortunately, we've got probably 80 to 90% of the field corn crop has already been planted, and perhaps about 70% of the soybeans have been planted here statewide, is the last I've heard on the farm radio broadcast. So at least the majority of both of those crops are in.
But, of course, what happens is that they're in an area that's flooded. Will that influence, or is the flooding that's so bad that not so bad that, you know, it won't interfere with the crops?
No, it'll interfere with it, Dr. Stan, because corn, for example, can take, I don't know, 3 to 5 days being underwater if the corn is sprouted and, you know, up 2, 3, 4, 5 inches. But the water stays on it longer than that, it'll finally kill the corn. And beans are more sensitive, soybeans are more sensitive. I don't know how many days underwater they can be, but maybe 1 or 2 before the water's got to be off and receding, or else that crop is gone. So everything is so wet now that, you know, it's going to be a couple of weeks or a month before, if it stopped raining now, before the ground would be fit for farmers to go in and replant what they've already planted, or to finish planting what they didn't get done before the rain came.
Well, we're just going to have to hope and pray that the rain stops. But the thing is, if they want to create a problem, they can. And the thing is, it is all secret. How could you have a free society when the government has all sorts of secrets from the people? And it's always in the name of national security or state security, but what are they protecting, and why won't they let the American people know what they're doing with their weather modification programs? And of course, we have a great 4-tape set on weather modification. We have a great DVD. I think it's Government Secrecy and Weather Modification, something like that. And then, of course, we have got a book on weather modification. We have one on HAARP, the HAARP, the ultimate weapon of the conspiracy, weather modification. I think weather warfare is the name of the book. So the information is there. We just need people to understand that they really do have the capacity. We even have a 4-tape set on HAARP and on the chemtrails and all of these things that they can do to modify the weather. And you say, well, why would any rational people want to modify the weather and create famine? But we're not dealing with rational people. That's the problem. Woody, we're dealing with people who have a different worldview.
Yes, they certainly do, and they're not interested in our country, and they're really not even interested in the people of our country.
Well, if you see, there really are people who believe that there are too many people in the world. The world would be far better off if we could eliminate, you know, 1 billion, 2 billion, 5 billion, 5.5 billion people, and that's so foreign to the way that you and I would think, but unfortunately, this is the reality of what we're up against.
Well, may our God hold those people in check until it's his time to bring his son to the throne in this world.
Amen to that. Well, I hope and pray that he will intervene. I don't know whether he's going to. Sometimes he lets things run their course, and then he intervenes. So we're just going to have to wait and see. All I can say is that we're living in difficult, frightening, exciting, dangerous times, but I think that sooner or later we're going to see God's hand brought into this whole issue.
Well, if he does not intervene, Dr. Stan, the world is going to be destroyed.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. We've got Woody calling from Iowa, pointing out that certainly there are problems with the crops there. A lot of the crops have been planted, but there's so much rain, and certainly in some areas they're flooding. And of course, those crops can be lost because of flooding. And then if it doesn't dry out, you're not going to be able to replant crops. So we're just going to have to pray that the severe rain that they're having now will let up. Have you ever had this sort of weather before? I can't even remember. Seems like it's so strange, so many tornadoes, so much rain, so much flooding in certain areas, drought in other areas.
Well, I can't remember it on the national scale like it is this season, but I can remember back. We talk about here the floods of 93 in Iowa, where we had floods that were, I think they were considered 300 or 500 year floods, where the city of Des Moines lost its fresh water, and then numerous places again on the river bottoms, towns that had been had grown up by the river, they were flooded. We had 40 days of rain, like in July and into August, and we basically had 40 inches of rain.
Oh, boy.
And normally our rainfall in Iowa is 25 to 30, maybe 35 inches in a year, and we had 40 inches in 40 days. And so, yes, there's a lot of comparisons being made here between 93 and what we're experiencing now.
Well, please keep us advised what's going on there. Appreciate it. You know, every Wednesday we do open lines, so let us know what's happening there. And we'll just hope and pray that the rain stops and we get the crops in, because if we don't, we're going to be in real trouble, as will much of the rest of the world.
Yes. Hey. Well, Dr. Stan, may I ask one question
before you
let me go?
Right.
It's kind of technical, but I was wondering, with whatever signals this HARP apparatus puts out into the atmosphere, do you know of any radio receiver equipment that could detect when that signal is on or off?
No, I really don't. That's beyond my field of expertise. But we do know that they are using this, and certainly Jerry E. Smith, who's a frequent guest on our program, has talked about how they've been firing this thing up. And of course, what it does, it puts this tremendous radio beam up into the ionosphere, and it heats it. But whether we'd be able to pick this up with some sort of receiver, I just don't know.
Okay, Dr. Stan.
Well, thanks so very much for calling.
You bet. Good night.
Good night. You too. Bye-bye. And let's go to John calling from Vancouver, Canada. But ladies and gentlemen, pray for those people in Iowa. Pray that the rains let up. You know, God can do anything he wants to. I just hope, he will intervene there. But anyway, John in Vancouver, Canada, good to have you with us tonight.
Well, Dr. Stan, I hate to be the canary in the mine shaft, but you guys, the more you're talking, the more I realize this HARP stuff must be for real.
It is very real. You can get a lot on the Internet about it, but we have a fair amount through our ministry as well.
And the question I had is, remember I called about a couple of months ago, and I said we had, those fierce winds, and then from that, those are trees that have never been blown down for hundreds of years, and from then we went to flooding that we've never seen before, like people losing their property by the river. A lot of the property was lost just from the river coming up and taking away their land. And then now it's in June, I have to wear a thick winter jacket for weeks on end. I typically we have to have in Vancouver, BC, Canada here, typically in this time of year, we would have our windows open, air conditioning blowing, you'd be sweating it out and I've never had this before. I have to go outside, and when I go outside, I have to wear a winter jacket.
I know there's something is afoot. I can't tell you what it is, but I think that somebody is playing with the weather.
Exactly. And the clouds, you mentioned something about the clouds, and we've had, typically for the last several weeks, we get a tinge of hail, not hail, but a hazy overcast.
Right.
And day after day after day, for weeks on end, we hardly ever see the sun break through. It's just like a thin overcast. And I've never seen weather like that before. It's the first time in my life. There must be something to what you guys are talking about.
Well, I tell you, go back, and we've talked many times about that. A book that Zygmunt Brzezinski wrote, Between Two Ages, and can't find the book, we'll send you the page, where he just talks about how in the future, and this is written in 1970, in the future we're going to be able to create storms and droughts and new diseases. We know they created the new diseases because millions of Americans are sick from chronic new diseases at all sex. Nobody knows where they come from. I got a pretty good idea. Fort Detrick, Maryland, and other places operated by the military and the CIA. Hang on there for just a minute there. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. We've got John calling from Vancouver, British Columbia. And, of course, he's just saying that they got a strange sort of weather up there. And we've got strange weather here. We've just got so, it's been so intensely hot here the last few days. And ordinarily, of course, where we live, we get fog in the morning. And then, of course, it warms up in the afternoon. But not this intense heat that we've been having recently. Well, our telephone is, number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. John, anything else you'd like to tell us about what's going on up there, or why you're concerned?
Well, it's interesting, he mentioned Des Moines. I was in Des Moines, Washington, just this last Sunday. There was a fantastic church down there. And I'm thinking that if the weather's being used as a weapon, you know, creating earthquakes or whatever, and, you know, all these kind of tornadoes and flooding, if they're using this in Canada or against, you know, North America as using the weather as a weapon, this affects Northwest Washington as well as here in Vancouver. And I don't see how this, it comes back on the American continent, if you know what I mean.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, the Chinese are actually accusing the Americans of having caused this major earthquake that they had. You can go up on the internet and check this out. And now, maybe there's no truth to it at all. Maybe it's just an act of God. We don't know. But why is everything top secret? Why won't they let us know what they're doing? Why are everything classified? And if they have nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? But I will tell you that the Chinese are suggesting that the United States government was responsible for this. And certainly, if you get some of the material we have on weather modification, you'll find out that they can create storms. They can even direct the course of hurricanes to an extent. And they can create the tornadoes. They can modify the weather and create great storms and great droughts. And if they're doing that, are they the ones that are creating the problems in the Midwest today, creating, you know, certainly droughts throughout the world in some areas? Are they really setting us up for a worldwide famine, as it described in Revelation 6:8? I can ask the questions. I can give you a few of the answers, but I sure don't know much more than that.
Yeah.
But these are frightening times, John. There's a great deal to be concerned about.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. I was a doubter. I was a skeptic. Now I'm a believer. And thank you being the voice in the wilderness. Yeah, I'm going to keep listening to your program and maybe buy some of them books sooner or later, because I can't avoid it. I mean, I can't bury my head in the sand anymore.
God bless you. Well, you've got to get it out, and then you've got to start, with that head out of the sound, you've got to start sounding the alarm. This is what we need.
Hey, man.
God bless, and thanks very much for being with us.
You betcha.
Good night. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And basically, John is calling from Vancouver, just saying how strange the weather is up there, how much colder it is. Ordinarily, they expect it to be hot at this time of year. And, you know, with the air conditioning on, now you go outside, you have to wear a coat or a sweater. Things are cold up there. And, of course, as John was saying, he's been a skeptic for a long time. You know, he hasn't wanted to believe all these things we're talking about. But suddenly he begins to realize that something really is serious is afoot. And hopefully why he'll become one of those people who's out there on the front lines educating others. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, I really believe that this is such an important time, because I think that people are going to begin to listen to us, people that in the past would have sort of shrugged their shoulders and said it couldn't be true. But now they know something is afoot. And we've got to be there in a very quiet manner to tell them what's going on. But please remember, do not tell people too much. Tell them enough to get them interested. Try to get them to listen to a tape or watch a DVD or read a book tell them to go up on the Internet and begin checking these things out. And there's so much information up there that will verify what we're saying. Most people cannot believe the media's control. Most people cannot believe that anybody would be evil enough to want to kill hundreds of millions of people. And yet, of course, if you've listened to our program regularly, you know that that's not only a possibility. It is a reality. Well, we've got Jeannie on the line, a good friend. Hi, Jeannie. How are we doing?
Well, I'm fine. And, gee, you're just talking about me being a skeptic. I heard you, 11 years ago, and I thought, well, this couldn't be true. And I got curious, and then I started researching and found a lot of interesting things that are happening.
Well, I'm so glad that you did try to prove me wrong, and just, because, of course, Jeannie is one of the great assets we have. He's done some wonderful research for us, and I'm so glad that that you were skeptical, because at least you cared enough to want to know the truth. And this is one thing about liberals. Most of them are really dedicated. If we can, of course, bring them around to our point of view, and we're not conservative, because the conservative movement's been taken over as well. We're the people in the middle. We're the people who want to preserve freedom. Anyway, go ahead, Jeannie.
Well, that reminds me, I would tell you some facts, and of course I had the facts, but you would always say to me, now, Jeannie, you prove that. You get the facts.
Right.
And so that kind of prodded me on. I was curious about the chemtrails, and that's why I went to the conspiracy conference on Saturday, just in the afternoon. I listened to three speakers. They were all excellent. Scholars for Truth for 9/11. The pictures that they showed was just amazing. And then Jim Mars on the Rise of the Fourth Reich. And then the one that I really wanted to listen to was Aerosol Crimes, Chemtrails by Clifford E. Carnicom.
Right.
And he really impressed me. He wasn't one of these professionals that stand up there and pontificate that they know everything. He says he did have high classified clearance in the DOD, the Department of Defense, and extremely intelligent in computers and so forth. But he has a wonderful website, and that's what I wanted to mention this evening. The website is www.carnicom, and that is spelled carnicom.com. And he did go into HARP, and it's just amazing because I'm married to an engineer. And he's electrical engineer by degree. And that is something I'm really not familiar with. And I think the average person isn't either. And I was talking to him about HARP and how they have radio frequency waves going up to the ionosphere and coming back into our atmosphere. And Clifford Carnicom talked about how they changed our atmosphere above the earth, that we breathe, the plants, the animals, and we humans. And Clifford Carnicom was talking about how our atmosphere is now a plasma. And I asked my husband, I says, what does he mean by plasma? And Jim says, well, it's like a soup, and it's electrically charged. Well, we know with these chemtrails that they're putting out, they are putting salts, barium salts, into the atmosphere. Aluminum, a lot of things like dried blood cells that are coming out of the threads, like the disease Morgellons. And so I said, well, why do they need, I asked my husband, why do they need this plasma? He says, well, it's like a soup, and they need the salts to create electricity of whatever they're doing, whether it's for military, for over the horizon, or for other like biological, or just changing the whole geophysical shape of the world. And I believe, Dr. Stan, after listening to this and getting a breakdown of my engineer husband, that I have had experience with this myself of affecting me. And whatever these symptoms were, I never had it. And I believe they are now poisoning very slowly the world.
They could very well be, Jeannie, because, of course, they believe there are too many people in the world and would be far better off if they could simply eliminate, nine-tenths or more of the population.
Well, I'd like to, again, give the website for Clifford E. Carnicom, because he has a lot of links on HAARP, on weather control, about chemtrails, and it's all technical. This DVD is technical, and my husband watched it, and he was very impressed by it. I think it's the best one he's actually seen. And the website is www.carnicom, and that is spelled carnicom.com. And you'll just be amazed, Dr. Steve.
Well, we need to get Clifford back on. We've had him on a couple of times. In fact, he's featured on our four tape set on the chemtrails. But it's time to get him back on again. And
okay.
I appreciate so much your calling, and thanks very much.
Good evening.
Give my best to Jim. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And let's go to Todd, who's calling from Plattsburgh, New York. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm great, Dr. Stana. You're a real blessing, and I believe you're truly moved with the Holy Spirit, and I just can't tell you how much you've had an effect on my life, and just hearing a voice like yours, it's a blessing to me. But I just wanted to just add that when you were talking about, everyone's talking about HAARP and stuff, I kind of wonder if really HAARP is like kind of passé now, in the sense that they probably have much further, more advanced technology, whereas everyone's focusing on HAARP, and perhaps, you know, there's much different technology now, because HAARP is not necessarily the newest. You know, it's relatively, I guess, the knowledge of HAARP has been about, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, but you know, I just wonder if like, it's probably just kind of like having people focus on HAARP when actually there's probably a lot of other, perhaps, better technology out there that they're utilizing.
You probably are right, but the thing is that we don't know about that. If we do know about HAARP, we know what it can do. We do know the weather is changing. So certainly if there is other technology out there, I don't know about it, and none of the people I'm in contact with know about it, but certainly they have all sorts of secret projects out there. Why do they want to change the weather? We've signed certainly international treaties promising that we would never use weather warfare against other countries, so why would you develop but if you're not going to use it against other countries, unless you're going to use it against your own people. And that is a possibility. And you see, they don't look upon us as human beings. They look upon us simply as assets, as human assets, to be utilized by the ruling elite. And so I share your concern. There may well be things there that we have no idea about, but we're just going to have to wait and see. My fear, of course, is that it's going to be used to create a worldwide famine. And, of course, as a result of that, countless millions of people are going to die. And all we can do is simply sit here behind a microphone and try to point out the dangers of what's going on. And you may be entirely right. There may be lots of things we don't know about. Maybe somebody would like to call in if anybody out there does know.
Well, I wish I was like a lot of your guests there that had real, you know, specific knowledge. But the only thing I can, you know, my testimony is that, you know, where I'm from, they had an ice storm in 99, which was, you know, I grew up in this area where there's a lot of winter. It was very harsh, you know, not as harsh as, I guess, further in Canada, but we had an ice storm which just developed within the space of hours, and it was like they called martial law locally for about 3 months. I don't know if you've heard about that, but just the fact that I saw then, it just woke me up because I knew it wasn't natural. And the other day we just had a in this area, since I've grown up in this area, we've never had tornado watches, and we've had tornado watches for the past couple of years, and we had a storm which just came out of nowhere. And, you know, I just know personally, I just truly believe that you know, there are definitely, I mean, we can talk about, we need proof, or we need to know the names of the places and the people and the like HAARP or whatever, but, you know, I just think it's just, you know, you just have to just be aware. And discernment and just knowing that things aren't right and knowing that people on that side are spiritually, demonically indwelt. You know, they will not show their faces. They're gonna lead you like the Pied Piper, like you've said before, to the dark recesses and fool you all the way. That's how their guile is. They're full of guile. They're gonna lead you to the darkness, and you're not gonna know it until it's too late. I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead.
No, what I'm just saying is one thing I just wanted to say is it reminded me of Genesis. I talked about, you know, how God made Genesis 1. God made the firmament and divided the waters, and then Genesis 1:8, God called the firmament heaven and the evening and the morning. Well, you know, if God divided the waters and made the firmament, maybe the part of the chemtrail thing is just to desecrate the firmament or some kind of, I don't know, in some aspect.
Well, I really think that the people on the other side hate God. They hate everything he represents, and they will do anything they can to thwart God's plan for the world.
And people, you know, so many people tell me, do not give Satan credit by speaking about his works, speaking about him, and, you know, and this is probably a bad thing for me to, like, even to give him credit for doing this stuff. But you know what? I just want to say to the people, and Dr. Stan, I'm with you, that, you know, I'm giving my life to Christ. Everyone out there, give your life to Christ. He's the only way. He's the best way. We do not know his ways, but his ways are the best. Go in blind faith, and you will be saved. If you believe, because you know that this is not our home.
I think you're absolutely right. But, of course, not speaking about Satan, I think that's exactly what Satan wants. In fact, there's a wonderful story. I think it's Dialogues of the Devil. There's one that C.S. Lewis wrote. There's one that Taylor Caldwell wrote. But the whole idea of two devils talking together, and one of them says, you know, once we can convince the public that we don't exist, at that point we will have won. And so that's why we need to keep talking about it. They are there. They have a plan. But you can see through, you know, at times God's interference, God's intervention. Let me just share something with you personally. I live in California. We don't have 10 tornadoes in California. To my knowledge, I don't know anybody who's ever seen a tornado in California except one of our neighbors. And a tornado developed right across the road from where we live, came up the hill, took the bathhouse on our pool, swimming pool, turned it around about 30 degrees, came right up along the edge of our home, tore the grapevines off of our grape arbor, moved down and took out trees that were 3 or 4 foot in diameter, and somebody protected our house. Now, ordinarily, that tornado would have taken out our house. Well, the chances are that, you know, that they would go there and would not really damage our house, but would take off the grape arbors. I believe God's, I saw God's hand that day.
Yeah, God is always in infinitesimal steps in front of the dark side of Satan. But, you know, with also that, they were also probably trying to get your attention, too. You know,
they sure did that day, I'll tell you. When you see those 4-foot trees going out, and our house wasn't even touched. Why, of course, you realize that I think God wanted to keep me here doing what I'm doing. Hey, I got to run. I got another couple of callers, but it's so good to talk to Tom.
God bless you.
And you, too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, let's go to Rich, who's calling from Utica, New York. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. How, Rich? Hi, Rich. How you doing?
Very good, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure to speak with you. My comment is more in line with the previous comment from Plattsburgh, previous caller. And I just wonder quite a bit if some of this weather and problems that we're having is not maybe the birth pangs of a judgment that God is bringing about in the country because of our leaders and our entertainment industry, which, I mean, you can watch TV and find very few channels that is that wouldn't make an adult blush. You know what I'm saying?
I know. You're absolutely right. I believe God is going to bring his judgment on this country, and I don't think most Christians are prepared for it. In fact, too many of them think they're going to be whisked away on a cloud before anything bad happens. And, of course, that's what they thought in Europe during the Second World War, and that's why the churches are empty in Europe today. And we are told that before, you know, the man of sin is revealed, that, of course, there's going to be a great falling away. That's Thessalonians 2 Thessalonians 2. And, you know, I really believe that we are seeing that great falling away today.
I agree with you, Dr. Stan. And so sometimes I wonder if these is the government's feeble attempts to combat that, and they just make it worse, try to hide the fact that we are becoming a godless society, and they don't want us to recognize that God is trying to get our attention.
Amen to that. I agree with him. Certainly, God is going to work. I think we're going to be amazed to see how he works in the time ahead. But it doesn't mean that we're not going to go through terrible and difficult times. This is the thing. But I think the only thing that's going to sustain any of us is our faith. I mean, we can make all our plans, and certainly I encourage people to make plans financially and fiscally and as far as food is concerned. But in the final analysis, why you want to be sure on the right side with God.
Much the same as Joseph did in Egypt.
Amen to that. Anyway,
yes,
God,
sir.
Anything else you want to say there, Rich, before we let you go?
One other point, I was speaking to your screener who's from my area, and he wanted me to mention that this energy crisis has affected us in a way where major businesses are leaving our area because of the cost of fuel to operate in upstate New York and winter areas. So it's affecting us economically in a whole other area.
Now, is that the cost of electricity, the cost of electricity, or what?
Right. Well, it's the cost of operating the heating of a plant during the winter, employees getting back and forth to work because of the fuel prices.
Right.
And so they're moving down south where they don't have to spend the fuel on heating.
They're probably going to spend an awful lot of the air conditioning. They're having a real heat wave in the south. Hey, thanks very much for calling, Rich. Bye-bye.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly I always enjoy our open line Wednesday. Right now we have Jack calling in from Michigan. Hi, Jack. How are things back there in Michigan?
Well, Dr. Stan, parts of it south of me were blasted, and
By blasted, you mean with rain or with heat?
This was what I think is consistent with what Jeannie described regarding the plasma field in the atmosphere, because I don't have TV, but I will catch radio news segments as I did today, and they were, because it's like five days since the storm, and they're still out of power, and Detroit Edison was taking the news media around to various locations where it looked like a war zone. And in Oakland County, where this one fella had a huge yard, huge, probably 150, 200-year-old trees, and then new telephone poles that have been erected recently. He said within 60 seconds, the telephone poles were, virtually shredded on fire. These huge trees were down and just tore up. He said it was like a war zone. And then he said 10 minutes after all this, which occurred in 60 seconds, because he was home, apparently on the computer, and he kept track of time, 60 seconds. But 10 minutes subsequent to this event, the civil alert, siren sounded. So this, it happened so fast, right out of the blue, and I got to thinking, ever since I remember the perfect storm in October of 91, and similar events, there's even a secular physicist, James McCanney, out of Minnesota. George Norrie has interviewed him several times, and he's on record stating that the hurricane season of 05 was intimately connected, if not totally induced, by these weather modification technologies, including satellite-based lasers.
Well, we just don't know. Anything is possible. I believe that they have satellite-based lasers, but we just don't know, Jack. It's all top secret because we don't want to solve it to find out what we're doing.
Yeah, right.
Okay, anything else you want to say before we let you go?
We're
out of time. You hesitated there. He who hesitates is lost. God bless. We'll talk to you probably later this week or next week. Bye-bye, Jack. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope that you enjoyed our open lines this evening. And going along with what we're talking about, we do have a four-tape set on weather modification. And then, of course, we have a DVD, and it's on weather modification. I think it's government secrecy and weather modification. Anyway, by dog, you could ask for it. For Bob Fletcher, and on weather modification. But I think it's called Government Secrecy and Weather Modification. Then we have the book, Weather Warfare. We have a book called A Harp, The Ultimate Weapon of the Conspiracy. We have a DVD on harp. We have a four-tape set on harp. We have a four-tape set on chemtrails. I think we have a couple of those. So we've got a lot of great information that will help you to understand what's going on today. And then remember, we have a four-tape set on weather modification, a four-tape set on harp, a four-tape set on chemtrails, and then we have books on both weather modification and harp, and then we have, of course, our DVD, Bob Fletcher's excellent DVD, and there's no question that they have the capacity to modify the weather. I once again refer to Zygmunt Brzezinski's book, Between Two Ages. If you have a copy, look at the footnotes, the pages. I think it's about 59, but it's somewhere between 55 and 65 pages, page 55 and page 65, and if you need that information, we can always send it to you. You must understand we're dealing with people who have a different worldview, because they're energized by organized evil, and there really are groups out there, and we'll be talking about these either tonight. I think it's tomorrow night we're going to have a gentleman on talking about Gnosticism. Gnosticism was a Christian heresy that existed in the first to second century, but what it really was a continuation of the heresy that was outlined in the Kabbalah, and of course the Gnostics can persist into this very day. The basic beliefs of Gnosticism is that there are several gods. There is the God that the Christians worship. He's sort of a second-hand, not very smart God. And then there is the real God of the universe. His name is Lucifer. And these people worship Lucifer. And by so doing, of course, they get tremendous wealth. They get tremendous power, tremendous advantage. And you cannot understand so much of what's going on today unless you understand the spiritual forces behind what's taking place. And that, of course, is the subject of my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, available in book or in DVD. And then, of course, my talk on the Forbidden Secret, available in DVD with a syllabus. And then my talk on the Planned Police State, available on DVD. And we recommend the syllabus very strongly. You need to have this information. You need to have the documentation. And then you need to be able to express what's going on to other people. You're always hearing about these Barner studies, where they go around, George Barner goes around, and they do the surveys, and all these people say they believe in God. They don't tell you that these people believe in a different God. Certainly, to understand the spiritual battle, you need to get the three pamphlets that we have called the Occult Hierarchy. That's the Occult Hierarchy. They're just simply a summation of our newsletters. You can go up on the Internet and pull them down for nothing, or you can get them in the pamphlet form. I prefer them in the pamphlet because it's just nice to have them and to be able to refer to them. So, part of these were written by, I wrote, and partly were written by Dr. Dennis Cuddy. But the people on the other side are quite open in what they say. They believe that there is a group of ancient masters, people who have perfected themselves, whose serial reincarnations, who have reached a state of divinity, who are directing the happenings here on Earth. And if you'd like, of course, to get the pamphlet put out by the other side called The Spiritual Hierarchy, The Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy, we'd be glad to send it to you. And they will tell you they have their people planted at every level of society. And if you want a copy of their pamphlet, not mine, for what they say, we'd be glad to provide it. Our number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Paul Cross, who's a movie writer and producer, and actually he's acted in his latest DVD. And, of course, it goes into the background of what really happened on September 11th, 2001. Now, that was really a watershed event. I mean, the world has never been the same, and America has never been the same since that event. What really happened? Well, we saw two planes crash into the Twin Towers, and those Twin Towers just collapsed. And most people think that the Twin Towers collapsed because the planes crashed into them, but is that really what happened? And then, of course, the question comes up as to what really happened in Shanksville in Pennsylvania. When you look at the crash scene where this plane, we're told, it just simply nosed down and crashed into the ground, there isn't any plane. There isn't any plane there. There's no wreckage at all. The wreckage is strewed over a period of several miles, but there's no wreckage of the crash site. How could that be? And then, of course, we come to the point of view of what happened at the Pentagon, and that's really the basis of the film that Paul has put out. And with that as a background, Paul, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
It's my pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and how it was that you made a motion picture about the crash at the Pentagon and what happened in the aftermath?
Well, I'm an actor, basically, and I also am a filmmaker, and this is my fourth film that I made, and this was a strange happening, how this whole thing came about. I was actually in Washington, D.C. on September 11th, 2001. I was making a documentary at the White House called Follow the Leader, and it's about 4 days in the life of the President of the United States, not about George Bush, mind you, but it's about the office of the presidency. It's kind of like a backstage view of how the office works. And in that film, I had a lot of people that I interviewed, the Secret Service, Wolf Blitzer, Senator Hatch, Senator Warren, Orrin Hatch and Senator Bunning. And they would walk us through how their office, how their job functioned with that of the office of the president. And we finished filming on September the 10th, and on September 11th, we began our post-production work in Georgetown at Henninger Studio. And about 9 o'clock or so, I forget the time, I went down to the kitchen to get a cup of coffee in what they called their break room there. And everybody was standing around watching television. And I glanced up at it, and I saw the World Trade Center was on fire. And I said to this woman standing next to me, I said, "What are you guys looking at?" And she said, "Oh, a plane crashed into the World Trade Center." And frankly, Dr. Stan, I didn't give it much thought, because nobody was talking. It was a post-production house. I thought they were working on a documentary about the first incident at the World Trade Center, I think in 92 or 93.
93, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thought they were working on that, and I was getting my coffee, and I looked back at the television set, and naively I said to myself, "I wonder how they're going to get that plane out of that building." I didn't know that two buildings had been hit. So I went upstairs with my coffee to tell my editor that I was watching something downstairs on television, and that plane had crashed into the World Trade Center.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Paul Cross. We'll be talking about his video on what happened that day. All right, Paul, go right ahead.
Well, so I told him, and he came downstairs, and we were watching it. And when I came back down, I don't know the time frame on this, but one of the towers wasn't there. And I turned to the same woman who I asked what happened, and I turned to her very childlike, and I said, what happened to the tower? And she said, it collapsed. Well, I really knew that something had happened that was earth-shattering at that moment, obviously. It didn't take me long to figure out that it was not a small plane that I had thought had crashed. I was nonchalant as she was acting. And we were then evacuated from the building we were in. I don't know why, but we were, because we were not near the Pentagon, and we were not near the White House. Our hotel was only 5 minutes from the White House, but the Pentagon was a good 10 minutes from where we were in Georgetown. So we left the building, and we got into our car, and traffic was a complete monster. You could not move. It was just bumper to bumper. It was just snailing its way. And I said to my partner, Marianne, I said, I really want to go over to the Pentagon and see what had happened. Now, this, of course, was after the Pentagon had been hit. And there was talk about a plane, a rogue plane was heading towards the White House or possibly the Capitol. So by that time, the plane or the missile had hit the Pentagon. And I said to her, I want to go over there and see if we can see what happened. And she said, well, we're never going to be able to get near there. So I said, you're probably right, but let's go. But by that time, we could see the smoke and everything. So it took us hours to get over there. What usually is a 10-minute drive took us several hours to get there. And then when we got there, I was extremely surprised to see that we could get very close. So we parked near this apartment building, and there was a lot there. We parked there and then walked down this little hill. And at the bottom of the hill was the freeway. And across the freeway, 6 or 8 lanes across the freeway, was the crash site. There were other people standing there, too. It was not a big crowd, but there were people there. And I just stood there for a good 10 minutes, I think, before I ever turned to my partner, Marianne, and said to her, something is really wrong here. She said, what do you mean? And I said, well, where is the plane? How come the indentation, the point of impact is so small? How could a plane have done that small damage?
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Paul was telling us that he was in Washington, D.C., actually on the morning of September 11th. He was filming, just completed a documentary that they were filming at the White House. And on that morning, of course, he heard that the attack had occurred on the Twin Towers and saw the television, and then he heard the attack had occurred on the Pentagon. So he actually drove over to the Pentagon. It took them several hours to get there because of the intensity of the traffic. But they could actually park their car, walk down to the freeway, look across the freeway at the Pentagon, and he said he stood there for 10 minutes and then turned to his partner and said, something's wrong here. And go ahead. What was wrong? What was wrong with what you saw there at the Pentagon that morning after the 757 hit the plane? I think it was a 757 was supposedly hit the building.
Well, the thing that was really obvious, Dr. Stan, was not what I saw, it's what I didn't see. I did not see any remnants or any sign or evidence that a 757 had hit this building. There was no wreckage whatsoever.
And you would expect that the tail would have broken off,
the wings would have broken off.
I was expecting to see
a mammoth aircraft as large as a Boeing 757 to be sitting there strewn all over the lawn. I was even surprised we could get this close to the Pentagon. I thought we would never get this close because usually when a plane goes down, it scatters debris for miles sometimes, and they block the area off so they can look for the pieces, for evidence, et cetera, because the FAA, they always want to piece everything together to see what happened. And there was nothing like that there. I mean, there was no, you could get that close, which was shocking. And the fact that there was no wreckage, no debris, was shocking. The grass was completely intact. It wasn't scorched. I mean, a plane this size would have had been loaded with fuel. It just had left Dallas, which was just a couple minutes away, on its way to California. So it would have been totally leveled with fuel. There wasn't no fire, no scorched grass. It was completely intact, green. There was no indentation where this plane would have made skid marks or an indentation of some sort where it would have impacted to the ground. There were light posts that were up. There were telephone poles that were up that shouldn't have been up in that direction. I had mentioned this on another show that I've been a guest on, and I've gotten emails from people, one or two people, who have a picture of a lamppost and I think it was a light pole or something that was allegedly knocked down by whatever was in its way. But I'm here to tell these people who sent in this picture to me that a plane that size going that fast, that lamppost would have been decimated. It simply would not have been pristine as it was. It was just knocked down. It's such madness to think a plane hit that building. It's just shocking to think anyone's buying it.
Well, now, there was some sort of a fire there, was there, because certainly you've seen pictures of the fire engines and them squirting water on it.
There was fire. When I was there was none. I didn't see any fire.
All right, so you were there a couple of hours later. Had the building collapsed yet? Had that segment of the building collapsed yet or not?
Yes, it did.
All right, fine.
It did. But if you look at pictures, and I showed them in my film Severe Visibility, there are pictures of the impact site immediately after it happened. And that hole, I think, was 16 feet wide.
And when, how did a 757 go into there and go through three levels of the four, I think, of the rings of the reinforced concrete of the Pentagon? How did this this plane go in there and just simply all disappear? The tail simply fold up on itself, the wings fold up on themselves. And, of course, why wasn't there a major fire at that time? We saw what happened when the plane crashed into the south tower, this tremendous ball of flame and fire.
Right.
Yeah, but by the time you got there, what was it, 2-3 hours later?
I got there probably more than 2 hours later. I would say it's more like 4 hours later. It seems that we were on the road. We had to take a very circuitous route to even get there. It was even hard to make. We were going up, I think that's Wisconsin Avenue we were on, and we had to get from there over the bridge somehow. I don't think we took the bridge we usually take. It just was a real madhouse getting over there. I almost gave it up, but had to see it perform myself. And I must also say that when I went there, I was, and I know I've been quoted for saying this, so I'm kind of like repeating myself, but I was a flag-waving Republican, frankly. I had always voted Republican. I was never for George Bush, though, I must go on record as saying. I did not vote for him ever. I knew he was bad news from the get-go. But I walked down that hill that day expecting to see America attacked. And I know we were attacked, but the question is by whom?
All right, fine. And so you knew at that point, of course, that something was wrong about the story that had been told. Because there should have been wreckage. There should have been at least the wings. There should have been at least the tail. That tail would not have folded on itself and simply gone into the hole. So, there would have been some remnant there at the plane, and there just wasn't any.
Well, see, what they claim, of course, is ludicrous. They claim that the heat was so intense that it simply burned everything up. Well, that's madness. You would have to be a nutcase to believe that. Plus the fact they said they took the remnants of the bodies that survived and their DNA to some place, I forget what state it was, wasn't Washington, D.C., and it wasn't Virginia. I think it was some place nearby at some morgue at some Air Force base where they performed the operation of trying to decipher who was who from DNA. DNA is very fragile, and to think that would survive, that human DNA would survive, but yet a 757 would not. I mean, how dumb do they think
we are? What about the motors? Certainly, we were told that was there a motor in there that did the engine survive?
Well, I've seen pictures. I saw nothing there, of course, because I was not that close. But if there had been engines there on the lawn, I would have seen them. I believe I've seen some sort of an engine picture that had ended up in the inside the Pentagon, I guess the C-ring, which is the final ring. But they show you something. I've heard and I've read excerpts from experts saying that that was not an engine to a 757. In fact, they also had a picture of this is really pushing it. They have a picture of a part of the fuselage, which has like red, white, and blue, like American Airlines markings, but it's pristine. It doesn't show, it's not burnt up, it's not charred, it's not bent. It's like put there as a prop. Because if that impact was so horrendous, and they try to get you to believe that it destroyed the plane, then how could this piece have survived so pristine?
And, of course, I've seen that same picture, and it looks like it from a very, very small plane, not from
exactly.
A major...
Exactly, smaller plane, yes, indeed.
Now, Chris, one of the pretty major issues here is the fact that there are all sorts of video pictures, all sorts of video cameras, focused on the Pentagon that morning. The FBI collected the videos and has refused to release any of them. Well, they did release one. It didn't show much of anything. If there is nothing to conceal, why are they concealing the dozens of video cameras that they had focused on the Pentagon that morning? Why are they concealing those videos from the American people? If there's nothing to hide, why are they hiding it?
I think the reason is obvious, and also what's so surprising in this is that the way they take the American public for granted in our alleged stupidity, because the video that they did release from their own cameras there at the Pentagon that they claim show the 757 hitting the building, it is madness for them to release this video and then say to us, that's the 757 hitting the building. I defy anybody to show me a 757 in that video. All you see is a white plume of white smoke along the bottom of the screen, very low to the ground, which is obviously a missile.
Well, let's get a little bit into your film, because, of course, you acted the film. We've watched the film. It's fascinating. And it's the story of an Army major who is actually an accountant working for the military. And where did you get the plot for this story?
Well, Doctor, when I had decided to make another movie, I thought for about 5 minutes, what's my subject going to be? And then this has been in the back of my head since 2001 up until I started to put the film together in 2006. It instantly came to me, I know what this movie's going to be about. It's going to be the event at the Pentagon. So I didn't want to make a documentary because I had just come off of making two documentaries. I wanted to make another feature film. And I must have spent about a month or so going through all the websites on the Internet relating to that day, but in particular Flight 77. And I kept printing out all this information. And after a month or 6 weeks, I looked at this huge stack of paper by my desk and I thought, now how in the heck am I going to make a feature film out of all this? So I thought, well, maybe I should make a documentary. And I said, no, that's been done. I don't want to make a documentary. I think it will get more attention if it comes out as a feature film other than a documentary. Documentaries sometimes hide underneath the radar screen, and they don't get as much attention as I felt this subject matter demanded.
Now, right, you hold that thought. We'll be
sure.
Back in just a moment. Our guest this evening is Paul Cross, and we're talking about the movie he put together about what happened that morning. And, of course, it's a fascinating story. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, Paul, go right ahead, pick up the story from there.
Sure thing. And so I decided that I was going to make a feature film out of it, and I didn't know how I was going to do that, given all this information that I had to choose from for the plot. And I said, well, I need to invent some way of making a backstory that I can interweave into the information, the facts, the real facts. I was very careful not to invent anything when it came to the actual events except my character and the characters around me. Everything that happened that day, I wanted to document accurately. I did not want to do a Hollywood number on it and make it something that wasn't true, because I felt the world needed to see what really did happen that day to get them to think. So I must have sat at my desk for weeks until I found a way to weave it all together. And then I had to make a very difficult decision about some of the information that I had learned I didn't use in the picture, because it was just too much information coming at you at the same time. And I thought the audience is going to be really lost here if I give them too much information. I will overload their brains, they'll shut down on me, and I won't have their attention anymore. And I needed their attention desperately to tell this story. So I came up with the backstory of my character, of Major Stanley Kruger, and what he was going through prior to that day, that this event just set him off on the course of his own destruction. And that's how the story came together, with the facts and the fiction. We had shot a lot of extra material that when I got into the editing room, I couldn't use, because, again, I wanted the audience not to be overloaded with information. And I was giving them just a little too much information. And I also was very aware of not giving them information that seemed impossible to believe. You know, for example, the World Trade Center, I believe it was demolished. I believe it was demolition. I don't believe the impact of the plane or the fuel brought those buildings down whatsoever. It was all preset with demolition, same as Building 7. But the world saw those planes go into the building. So you could somehow say, okay, it was the planes that did it, although upon close scrutiny to watching these buildings collapse and to knowing a lot more than what they told us, you could see that the buildings did collapse on themselves. It was not due to this intense heat that they try to make you believe. I was very careful in making severe visibility not to give them that kind of information where they would have to question the veracity of the facts. I wanted them to get the facts that were easy for them to accept, or easy, not so much maybe to accept as easy for them to understand how it could have happened. It's very difficult to get the layman to believe, to see how demolition works and how the plugs, the little plumes of smoke that would come out of the building just as it was falling down on.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Paul Cross. We're talking about a film that he's made. What's the title of the film?
Severe Visibility.
Visibility. Okay. Severe Visibility. And, of course, we've seen the film. And it's this story, really, of what happened on September 11th in the Pentagon, and from the point of view of a military officer who wasn't sure what he saw that morning. He, in fact, said I've talked to people who claim that they saw something hit the building. I don't know whether they did or not. Certainly, there's something very strange about the entire story. I think a lot of people claim they saw something. Other people claim they didn't see anything. Was this a hologram? Was this a facade? Was it a missile? Was it a smaller plane? Certainly there was another plane that was close at hand that you talk about, a large cargo plane. What was that all about?
Well, the large cargo plane, you know, that was a very tricky part to put into the movie because it was basically a decoy so that the 757 could hide under it so that it appeared as one on the radar scope so they could get rid of that 757 because there was all kinds of eyewitnesses to the fact that a 757 was circling over the White House almost saying, look at me. They wanted to make sure that there were people on record. There were no pictures of it, though, I might add, which I think is strange, too. Where, I mean, they wanted to set the stage that there was a 757 in the area, and it made its way over in that direction. Then it went off the radar scope because it was underneath the C-140, and the two planes were separate on the radar screen up to a point, and then when they lost track of Flight 77, that's when it was, to me, to my way of seeing it, from all the extensive research that I've done, was hidden underneath that C-140, because I also firmly believe, 100%, that there were no pilots in these planes. These were all drones. They were done by remote control, if you will. There were no people, in my opinion, on those planes that went into the World Trade Center or into the plane that allegedly went to the Pentagon. And then I get asked the question, well, what happened to these planes? What happened to these people? I've got to tell you, I don't have the answer to that. I just don't. I think if I did, I wouldn't be here. But I think it's quite possible that they were, and I won't go into what I tell you in the movie because I don't want to give away the ending to people who haven't seen it yet. But I personally think all the people were put onto one plane. They all would have fit onto one of those planes. Each flight went out less than half empty, so there wasn't enough room on one plane for all the people. I don't know. It's a great mystery what happened to the plane and the people. It's just an absolute mystery. I do give, though, as I say, I don't leave it hang in the movie. I had to give an ending to it. And the character who is a British reporter who gets a hold of me, he gives me his whole theory. He has a reason, an explanation of what happened to the planes. But I won't give it away.
All right, fine. Well, of course, it's fascinating as you contemplate this. And the thing is, we have no answers. We do have a lot of questions, though. We've interviewed Jim Mars, who has interviewed a woman who is actually in the Pentagon, came out to the hole in the side of the building, and there was no plane there. I mean, Sydney, she was in the building. She walked through that hole, but when she got to the hospital, there come the men in black with, you know, and the black glasses, and they're telling her that she saw a plane. She said, "I didn't see a plane." "Oh yes, you saw a plane there. You saw the plane, and you saw the plane." And, of course, everything done to convince her she'd seen the plane. She didn't see the plane, and then she told Jim Mars about this. And of course, but this is the story. And time again, people who knew something about what happened that day have been harassed, have had their lives threatened, have come under tremendous, tremendous pressure. Have you encountered that at all in your analysis, Paul?
I definitely have. I get a lot of fan mail, but I get hate mail as well. I've gotten some veiled death threats, harmful threats. They give me chills when I read them. It really scares me to think that somebody would be this close-minded, this unpatriotic, that they wouldn't at least look at the evidence before drawing their conclusions. Because, Doctor, this is what we're talking about. Is so important to our freedom.
Amen to that. Well, Chris, this was a watershed event. America will never be the same again unless, of course, we find that maybe we've been lied to about what happened that morning. And if they're not lying, why are they suppressing all the information?
They're doing it.
Hold up. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead, Paul. I don't mean to interrupt you, but you weren't going out over the air at that time, so I want this to be recorded properly, so go right ahead. You were saying, and I sort of asked a rhetorical question, and you went ahead and answered it. Go right ahead. What are your thoughts as to why this is taking place?
Well, I think there's several reasons why it took place. One was definitely a false flag war, so that we could somehow or other get the American people and the people around the world behind this preemptive war on Iraq, which killed a couple hundred thousand Iraqis, and I've lost count of the Americans, I think 300 or 400, I think, by now.
About 470 right now. But
yeah,
that's in Iraq, then they don't bother them. They sort of ignore what's going on in Afghanistan. We've lost another 100. But, of course, the trouble is, of course, almost a third of them have psychiatric problems after being there. Another third have head injuries from the blast that are there. So almost somewhere between a half and two-thirds of the young men we're sending over there will never be the same again. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands of American soldiers. So go right ahead.
Absolutely horrible. Excuse me. And they needed an excuse to do this preemptive war for the oil, for the military-industrial complex, and for worse, if it gets worse, if all these lives lost can get worse, which it can't, but to intensify it, I think it's globalization. I think that there is a grand plan in mind, and the grand plan does not have anything to do with our liberties, does not include our happiness, our rights. It is to make us slaves, for lack of a better word, to go out and work like little ants and then give all of our money to them, which is what we're doing now, let's face it. I mean, almost $5 a gallon, and it keeps going up. When's that going to end? Food prices, everything, the mortgage crisis, the housing situation here and the rest of the world. All these companies being bought up by other companies, becoming one big company soon that owns everything. And I'm always so shocked when people don't realize this. I mean, long before I ever was at the Pentagon, long before 9/11, long before I made severe visibility, I began to notice all these companies being bought up by other companies, and I kept thinking, what's up with that? You know, it just seems to me like someday.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. All right, well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess certainly is Paul Cross. And Paul, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners where they can get your DVD, where, of course, they can get more information. Do you have a website you'd like to get out?
Yes, absolutely. It's www.severevisibility.com. And on that website gives you all the information on the film. You can see a trailer on the film. Gives you information of where you can buy it. You can also go to Amazon.com, buy it there. And also, if you visit the website, you will get a history of why I made the film. Although I think that link is not working properly, someone told me. But there's a lot of information on the website, so you can familiarize yourself with this topic if you haven't been aware of it before. And, you know, Doctor, I have been to several foreign countries, you know, on different continents with this film at film festivals. And what surprised me, and then it didn't surprise me at the same time, was how many people in different countries were aware of this. I would have Q&A after the screenings, and people would say, you know, good film, totally enjoyed it. You took us for a real ride on it. But we knew about this. It, you know, the subject matter fascinated us, but we weren't surprised. I don't get that in America. I get very strange reactions here, extremely strange reactions here. There are sometimes when I feel, when I'm in a crowd and they know who I am or they know what film I've just made and put out, I almost get the feeling of being, what word do I use, a criminal of some sort, someone bad. I've had people say to me, how dare you say this about our country? It's too soon afterwards. Well, when is it going to be the time? When is it not going to be too soon afterwards to stop people like these madmen who've done this to us?
Well, I think that, Chris, what you have to realize is, Paul, is that most of our people are patriotic. They love America. And what you are doing is challenging the very essence of what they are. They're Americans, they're patriots, they're willing to fight and die for our country. And, of course, they believe, of course, that we have freedom here and that country is worth fighting for, without understanding, of course, that they're being totally manipulated, their patriotism is being utilized, and they're being deceived. And, of course, what we have to really is understand the very nature of what we're up against. And, of course, one only has to, of course, understand the writings of Plato and of Machiavelli and of Trotsky and, of course, a man named Leo Strauss and the modern-day philosopher who, of course, ties it all together, Michael Ledeen, and, excuse me, Congressman Ron Paul, and a newsletter, in an article he wrote back in 2003, laid out the whole idea of the neoconservative movement, which has taken over the Bush administration, which believes in the philosophy of Plato and specifically of Machiavelli, that lying is all right and cruelty is all right, and that the very essence of the ability of the prince to rule is war. And they had to have a means of getting us into a war. They had to have a means of convincing us we had to go to war, and 9/11 was that thing. And of course, I hope many of our listeners will want to get my May and June newsletters, which will lay out the entire story as Congressman Paul laid it out from the writings of Michael Ledeen, who is one of the chief philosophers of the neoconservative movement. This is no longer our country. This is their country. And they are using their power over the media and over the minds of the people to manipulate us. We've got to break loose. And I simply hope and pray that the material that you put out will get people to begin to think. And at least, even if they are angry with you at the present time, hopefully down the line they're going to remember what they saw in that film. Have these people are angry with you? Have they seen the film, Paul?
Yes, they have seen it, and some have and some have not. The ones who have seen it are not angry with me as much, I don't think they are at all, as the ones who haven't seen it. I think they're under the impression that my film hammers on top of their head my viewpoint. And in my opinion, it doesn't just do that. First of all, it doesn't hammer you on the head. You walk out of the theater you turn the DVD off, and you ask yourself, wow, that is a whole different approach to that day than I ever thought. Some would say that. Some would say, well, I knew that. And some say, this is ridiculous. Our country would never do this to its own people.
Our country would not, but there are people who, in the Bush administration,
right,
who would do, because they don't represent our country.
That's
an entirely different worldview. I think that's the important thing you have to get over, is that our country has been taken over by people who don't believe in traditional American values, either liberal or conservative. They have their own vision of what the world should be.
That's right. And it seems to me that they're getting away with it, because I don't see anything in the mainstream media. The mainstream media, I'm having a heck of a time getting this out in the mainstream media. None of the mainstream media has picked this up. They were invited to the premiere. No one showed up. I even invited a lot of the Hollywood liberals to the premiere, and surprisingly, no one showed up.
Where was it premiered? Where did you show it?
In Hollywood.
I see. What, a regular theater?
Yes, it was at the Lemley's Theater. It was a film festival.
Okay.
And I took that opportunity to invite the press, mainstream media. I took that opportunity to invite celebrities that say they're for this 9/11 truth movement, and I didn't hear from anybody. If they couldn't come, then at least promote the film so that we spread the word. But somehow or other, that hasn't happened, and that sort of has put me back a little bit mentally. I don't understand that.
Well, has it shown on any other motion picture? Have you been able to get into any other theaters besides the film festival?
No. We've only had it in a film festival in this country here, and then it's been in film festivals in other countries.
Are you able to get it showed in other countries? In other words, can you get this disseminated overseas?
Yes. And they are very supportive of the film. I got an email the other day from a gentleman in Helsinki. They want to show it there in the theater. I get letters and emails from Germany, from Denmark, from Great Britain, Canada, France. But I don't get as much from the United States. This is what's so depressing for me, you know, because if we don't stand up and say, wait a minute, this cannot happen to us again. If we don't stand up and don't do something about it, it's going to happen again.
Well, Paul, do you have a telephone number where people can call to actually get the DVD if they'd like to get one?
No, I don't, but they can go on to www.severevisibility.com.
All right, fine. www.severevisibility.com. If I could make a suggestion, if you could have any sort of an answering service. We sell a lot of things to our ministry, but you have to have an answering service. You have to have a telephone number. It'll mean that it'll get out a lot better when you get on the radio. You can,
very good idea.
Of course, you can have an 800 number. They can call in. It costs a little bit, but in the long run, we're selling ideas. And if people they can't remember, of course, what the website is. They have difficulty remembering. I have difficulty listening to a program and getting that website down. Again, it's Severe Visibility, severevisibility.com. But I hope down the line you will get, of course, an 800 number. It costs a few bucks, but I said that you've got a lot of money invested, a lot of time invested in this. But what we need to do is get the American people to begin saying, is it possible that really we have been lied to? And all you need to do is if you've seen the pictures, you go up on the Internet and look at the pictures of suddenly at the crash site at Shanksville, Pennsylvania. There's no wreckage.
No wreckage at all.
Look at the pictures of the crash site there at the Pentagon. There's no wreckage. There's one little a piece of a plane. But it's painted red and white, but it's a very small plane. It's very obvious it's a very small plane.
So, and there were no bodies and no blood found there.
Right. Isn't that amazing?
It's totally amazing that they're getting away with it. Between that, the Pentagon, the World Trade Center, and Building 7, I don't understand how these people have not been brought to justice.
Well, of course, the big thing is, of course, that the investigation that they had, the initial investigation, the Intelligence Committee that met the combined Senate Congress Intelligence Committee. I mean, one of the men who headed on the congressional side was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Went on to become the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. I mean, how impartial was he going to be? I think that Senator Bennett was
exactly
the other one. And then, of course, when we get to the 9/11 Commission report, I mean, almost half the people on that organization came from the Council on Foreign Relations, and the chief counsel who directed the report, you know, actually was a close personal friend of Condoleezza Rice.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they actually sealed for 50 years the testimony of 1,100 people. Who testified before the 9/11 Commission. Why would you actually seal the testimony of 1,100 people who knew something about what happened that day if you weren't trying to conceal their information?
That's right.
And, of course, the American people never asked.
You know, I don't understand that either. I almost look at my fellow Americans like I'm in a foreign country. But frankly, Doctor, foreign countries are more in tune than we are.
Well, our job, of course, is to try to get people to think. And this is why I do what I do 5 hours a day. At least in the areas where we are, our voices heard, we do have an effect. In fact, here in Santa Cruz County, where I am, there was a higher percentage of votes on the Republican primary for Ron Paul than any other major county in the state of California. And certainly in Idaho, where our program goes, 25% of the people voted recently, about 2 weeks ago, for Ron Paul. 25% of the Republican vote went for Ron Paul. Not a word in the media.
Oh, that's amazing, isn't it?
It really is. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling, one of our friends here in Santa Cruz. Ray, do you have a quick question for our guest before we let him go?
This is Mike.
Well, all right, Mike, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I wanted to ask about the statement by Donald Rumsfeld when he said that it was a missile that had struck the Pentagon. He said that October 12, 2001, and I wondered if your guest knew anything about that.
I did know about that, and every time I'm reminded of it or see a clip on it, I'm always amazed of how that stays hidden.
Isn't that interesting, Mike? And I think you're absolutely right. Isn't it interesting how he could make that statement, it could come out, and then simply they don't refute it at all. They just go right on as if it had never been said, and most of our listeners probably have never heard about that.
It's right there on the net. Donald Rumsfeld, October 12, 2001.
Is it up on YouTube? Is there any way we could actually put that on our website?
Yeah.
Why don't you...
I have the original interview.
All right, fine. We'd love to get that, certainly a link to that on our website so people could see it.
Can
anything else,
more?
Mike? What?
One more question?
Sure, one more question.
Well, there's the question of the ground effect, which is to say that an airplane, a 757, could not fly that close to the ground at 400-plus miles an hour. The hole was at the first story of the building, which means it was right down skimming on the ground. And it creates a high pressure, a huge air cushion underneath the airplane, which... literally forces the plane up. That's what makes it fly. But if it's that close, it simply can't go that
can't
close
go
to the ground.
Home. It won't. I think the plane wouldn't even allow itself to do that. Number one, and number two, the weight vortex, if you will, would have, and anything that got in its way, cars, lampposts, fences, grass, would have been just blown all apart. But nothing of how that plane could have skimmed, like what you just said, the first floor at 400 miles an hour and not touch a car that was on the freeway, and the freeway is just a few yards from the point of impact, it's virtually impossible. And yet they're getting away with this tremendous lie.
The lampposts were laying down on the ground. They weren't damaged.
Right.
They were just laying down. So how big is it?
Impossible.
Mike, there are a lot of unanswered questions, and our job is to ask those questions and try to get people to think. What happened to the 1,100 bodies of the people who were in the Twin Towers that disappeared? If the building had simply pancaked, as we've been told, the Twin Towers, those bodies would have been squashed. They weren't squashed. They just disappeared. The only other possibility is they were vaporized when the building exploded. But nobody wants to mention that. How did you lose 1,100 bodies? And why did the basement of the Twin Towers burn for 3 months with the intensity of a crematorium? If you doubt that, the book, Who Were They?, written by the man who was responsible for identifying the DNA, his book, and the opening pages, he talks about how there was a fire in the basement of the Twin Towers after the explosion, and it burned with the intensity of a crematorium for 3 months. How would you get the steel to burn for 3 months? Steel was burning down there. It was molten steel. I mean, how could you get molten steel for three months?
Impossible. Plus, Doctor, would somebody please explain Building 7 to the world?
Well, all we do have to do is ask the questions, and, of course, there is no answer to that. Unless, of course, it was a controlled demolition, which I think it was. One only has to look at the pictures up on the internet at Google, building number 7.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, video, building number 7 videos. Look at the, and you can see it's a controlled demolition because the center of the building collapses first, and then the base of the building collapses. That's how you take a building down.
Well, also, I believe that building was the control center for the events of that day.
May very well have been. Who knows?
I think they wanted to obliterate any evidence whatsoever that that was the command post, and they demolished the building at 5:20 in the afternoon.
And there was
the building was almost pristine.
Amen to that. Anyway, thanks very much, Mike. Appreciate your call. Anything else you wanted to say? I guess we lost Mike, so hang on there, Paul. Our guest is Paul Cross. His film is Severe Visibility. Severe Visibility, you'll learn about it at www.severevisibility.com. And, of course, Paul wrote the film. He acts in the film. He's distributing the film and has a feeling of frustration. Here in America, a lot of people don't want to believe that maybe what we were told isn't true. But I would simply ask you, how could that plane have crashed at Shanksville and not left any wreckage? How could the plane have crossed into the Pentagon and not left any message? And why won't they release the videos that were taken that morning? Why won't they release them? Are they concealing something? I believe they are. Well, Paul, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program for us.
Okay. Well, I just want people to become aware of what's happening to them so that it doesn't happen again. And particular in an election year, it's ultimately important that people really step back and look at who we are deciding on putting in this office with tremendous power, so that you say to yourself, is this the type of a person that would allow something like 9/11 to happen to us and the world again? It's a very, very important election this year, and it's not because of the history of a first Afro-American or because of the first woman who got so close to the nomination. I mean, all that is wonderful. It's great. But there's another issue as important, as historic, and that's this is the first time that we're going to elect someone different than George Bush since 2000. So it's ultimately important that we get it right this time.
Well, do you think we're going to have an opportunity to get it right? I mean, are any of these candidates really going to represent the American interests? Are any of them going to have an investigation of what happened on September 11th? Certainly, I don't think John McCain is. I don't think Obama is going to have an investigation. So how are we ever going to get the truth out other than on a one-to-one basis? But I will tell you, Paul, I really do believe that people, because of the financial issues, if nothing else, are beginning to wake up, and people who have never asked questions before are beginning to ask questions, are beginning to realize that we've not been told the truth. So, actually, I've been at this for 46 years. I'm more optimistic now than I've ever been.
Well, you know, I'm glad to hear you say that, because sometimes I get very down thinking that.
Well, you haven't been at it long enough. You've got to learn to roll with the punches. You realize that we're coming down to the climax of history, I really believe, and more people know something seriously wrong. Things are beginning to affect their pocketbook. I mean,
the
price of oil, the price of food, I mean, what is happening to the morality of our country? People know something's wrong, and you've got some of the answers, we've got some of the answers, and hopefully they'll lead to listen to both of us. Our job, however, is to put the truth out. Whether people want to accept it or not is their problem, but I really believe that more and more people are going to accept the truth as time goes by.
Well, Dr. Stan, I think you're right, and I also want to take this opportunity to say what a great job I feel you do to get the word out of what's happening, the truth.
Well,
and I applaud you and your efforts.
God bless, and thanks very much, Paul.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and certainly we think Paul is doing a great job trying to get the truth out about what happened on that morning, that fateful morning. And this is simply a drama. It's a story. But, of course, there's a lot of truth to this story. And of course, we don't have all the answers. We've got an awful lot of questions. Certainly, we're going to be carrying a new video on this. It's put out by the architects for 9/11. In fact, tomorrow evening we'll be having Friday evening we'll have Richard Gades. We'll be doing our program, who actually put together the new video on what happened on that morning from an architect's point of view. And from an architect's point of view, it couldn't have happened the way we've been told, and he'll go into great detail on why. I think you'll enjoy it. Of course, we have five videos. We've got 911 mysteries. We've got 911. The ripple effect. We've got Dave von Kleiss's video. You actually have to give us a call. We don't have them all memorized here, but we have five different videos on what happened that morning, and I think you'll find them fascinating. Each one has a little different approach, but all of them have part of the story. So, and then, of course, we have the book, The Terror Timeline, which we recommend. We actually have my pamphlets, Foreknowledge, 911, there are three of them, very inexpensive for the three pamphlets together. And then, of course, the conclusion of my newsletters, The True Story of 911, and it's a pamphlet. And we hope that you'll want to get those and read them through several times. We carry the book, See No Evil by Robert Baer, and he really tells you at the very end of the the preface of the book, about one of his friends who was interviewed, one of the highest-ranking people in the CIA, who said, when the dust finally settles, why the American people will realize that 911, or what happened on 9/11, was not a failure of intelligence. It was a triumph. When the dust finally settles, the American people realize that when the dust finally settles, that this was 9/11 was not a failure of intelligence, it was a triumph of intelligence. How could that be? 3,000 people were dead? We have to understand that people are really only concerned about human suffering. They wanted an excuse to take us into the war, and 9/11 gave us that excuse. So we do hope you want to get our pamphlets. We want to get the book, See No Evil by Robert Baer, who worked for the CIA for many years. And in fact, that book had to have the clearance of the CIA before it could be published. It's available from Radio Liberty, See No Evil by Robert Baer. And of course, we have so much other information on what happened. We have the DVDs. We have a four-tape set on Why Did the Buildings Come Down? We have a four-tape set on 9/11, and then an update on 9/11. We have interviews with Jimmy Walters, and of course, William Rodriguez, and those are in our 9/11 updates. And Jimmy Walters is living in hiding in Europe because of the threats on his life, and William Rodriguez, of course, had his life threatened, and tremendous pressure brought to bear on him to silence him. He was the last person out of the North Tower, and he heard the explosions in the basement of the building before the plane impacted. In other words, they were already beginning to take out the central supports. And I'm sure that is why the steel in the base of the buildings was burning for 3 months afterwards. 3 months afterwards, with an intensity of a crematorium, according to the man who was responsible for identifying the bodies. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, we haven't been told the truth. 3,000 Americans died. Somebody is responsible for what happened that morning, because, of course, it was not exactly as we've been told. And if they're not concealing anything, why won't they release the videos of what happened to the Pentagon? Why are they threatening people? And why do they seal the testimony of 1,100 people? The 9/11 Commission sealed the testimony of 1,100 people. Why would they do that? Why would they conceal it? If there's nothing concealed, please pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty. Our number, 1-800-544-8927.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Yah's creation. It is Wednesday, the 11th of June, 2008, and good gobbly, good goobly.